So I would say on the fitness component, that's what's changed. Like companies willing to invest more, not just to offer a benefit, but to really genuinely making people healthier. Of course, genuinely, but also they have a return on investment, which is basically healthier people means less healthcare costs, less sick days.
Welcome back to the Business Side of Fitness podcast. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Each week on the show, we learn from movers and shakers behind some of the most well-known and innovative brands in our industry. The time has come to start the show. Everyone's got a story, and now it's time to hear from this week's guest. Let's welcome to the show, Masi Sardi. He's the Vice President and Head of Partnerships at Gympass. He's a problem solver, relationship builder, and leader of high-performing teams. Welcome to the show, Masi.
Thank you, Vanessa. Thanks for having me.
So obviously, Gympass has made a big splash in the press and just out there recently. And I'd love to hear a little bit about your background, how you came to Gympass, and what led us to this conversation today.
Sure. Yeah. I joined Gympass at the end of 2017 when Gympass was expanding to the US. At that time, it was already pretty established in Latin America and Europe. And I basically joined to co-lead the US expansion, working both on the client side of the business and on the partnership side of the business. And then lately, I've been focusing only on the partnership side, leading the partnerships team for the US and the digital partnerships team globally. Before that, I was at Bain in consulting, Bain & Company, and in the US. And before Bain, I spent many years at Google in Europe, in Dublin, Ireland, which is the headquarters for Google, working on the client side of the organization.
Would you consider Gympass a fitness and wellness business or a tech business? What would you consider? What industry would you consider Gympass to be in?
I would consider Gympass in the wellness, in the corporate wellness industry, right? Our main focus is really to make people healthier for our clients, for our corporate clients. So we're only a B2B platform. Of course, technology is a big component of what we do because we're a platform, we're a marketplace where employees of corporate clients meet with gym providers, fitness providers, and more recently, wellness apps. But if you ask me, for example, Amazon is a retailer, right? It's not a tech company. Tech, these days, everything is tech because it's an enabler. But our main focus is really serving our clients and their employees to make sure they're healthier and they are happier in general because of that.
So connect the dots for us. How did you make the shift from going to Google and Bain to then Gympass? How did that come about?
Yeah, so my first life was at Google. Of course, that's where I learned about working in a growing company, very fast pace. But I think what I liked there was really working for a company that has a mission of making people's life better. Because of course, at Google, you improve people's life by making them life easier, right? My wife works at Google. We met there. So of course, she still works for Google. So I still have that connection with that. And I really admire the company. But for me, I want to work for a company that, yes, makes people's life better, but also make them healthier. So that's why I like Gympass. But before Gympass, I went to consulting because for me, it was important also to have not only a client focus, but also more like a general manager type of approach. And that's when I joined consulting after business school. In consulting, the interesting thing that I learned, besides personally a lot of tools to be more structured and more efficient in general and more analytical, I started to work with HR as a client because a lot of the projects that we were doing in consulting, management consulting, was to transform organizations. And HR was of course, very important in these transformations. So I started to work with HR as a client. And that's basically when I joined from Bain, I joined Gympass because at Gympass, the client is HR, right? So we really work with HR, human resources, benefit managers on the client side to help them create a wellness, a well-being strategy for their employees. So I brought my expertise working with HR to Gympass, especially on the client side of the business. And then I evolved my role into just working on the partnership side. So I build a team that works with the gym and lately with the apps, with the wellness apps as well. But yeah, all these experiences seem disconnected, but And they're not, because they really helped me be where I am today.
And so Jim Pass already had this reputation elsewhere globally, and then coming into the US, how was Jim Pass originally received in the US when you first started, you know, trying to reach out to different corporations to create partnerships and different gyms?
Yeah. So the reason why we expanded to the US, and also what is driving our strategy here, at least at the beginning, was always, and it's always client driven, right? We expanded to the US because many of our corporate clients were actually American companies, but we were serving their office in, I don't know, Brazil or London. And so for them, it was very important to have a global wellness benefit strategy. And that's why we had a lot of demand from our existing clients to expand to the US. So of course, we started from those clients that were already our clients in other markets. So we came to the US and we started to build a network of gyms and wellness providers for them in the US. So it's always client-driven, because our goal is to make their employees healthier and make sure they have solutions out there for them, because their goal is always to have new people going to gyms, new people that become active, as this is a benefit, not really for people that were going to the gym already, but the clients that engage with us are people that want to see more employees active, more employees going to gyms. That's also why we also bring new people to our gyms, to our gym partners. And so wherever our employees, our clients have employees, we try to have a network of gyms and fitness providers there.
And so it sounds like you had a leg up already on the client side, but on the supplier side, how was Gym Pass received originally, since you didn't necessarily have a reputation with the suppliers?
Yeah, it was received very well, because we've always been a B2B only company, right? So I think gyms have a very strong consumer brand. And I'm not just talking about, of course, the large fitness providers and the large chains, but also here in New York, there are many studios that, even if they have one location in that area, everybody knows them and they have a very strong brand in that area. So the reason why gyms and studios perceived us very well since the beginning is that we're not competing with them in that space. We're not competing with them in the consumer business. We're not competing with them for potential customers that were going to them anyway, or they're potentially interested in going to those gyms anyway. But we're really helping them unlock a new market of people that were not going there because they didn't know about that gym, or because maybe they couldn't afford that gym and now their employer and can subsidize for them. So I think the key was really make sure providers understand that we are only a B2B provider. We're not a consumer business at all. And we have no intention of doing consumer business, because our mission is really to activate new people. And we believe that the only way to activate new people is through corporations.
And how has corporate wellness changed within the last few years? Obviously, COVID was a huge catalyst for change.
Yeah, it's a great question. Corporate wellness has changed a couple of things. One, the fitness component, right? And then the second one, beyond fitness, so other categories as well. I would say the fitness component has changed, because at the beginning, a few years ago, I think companies already wanted to offer a fitness benefit, and many of them had it. For example, when I was at Bain here in the US, I had some discounts for gyms as part of being an employee there. But few companies wanted to invest in this, right? It was more like a nice to have, was more like a perk, a discount that they were offering. But like a 5% discount to a gym, like waiving the initiation fee, didn't really bring to those gyms new people that were probably going there anyway, right? Even without these discounts. So many of these companies just wanted to check the box and offer a fitness benefit. So what evolved over time is that more and more companies are willing to invest in this, in fitness, to have new people going. So they started to see, they stopped seeing this as a benefit, like to check the box, but more something like, okay, let me see how many people actually use it, how many people actually go to gyms. And the only way that these companies realized that was helping increasing the number of people going to gyms and not giving benefit to always the same people was basically offering variety and investing dollars in it, so they could make it more affordable for employees beyond the, I don't know, 5 or 10% discount they could get directly from gyms. That means that employees are still aware that they have access to sometimes premium gyms, but they don't perceive it as a discount. They just perceive it as their employers helping them to make it more affordable. And of course, the variety helps because it allows people to choose whatever they want without having HR to dealing with many different gyms. So I would say on the fitness component, that's what's changed. Like, companies willing to invest more, not just to offer a benefit, but to really genuinely making people healthier. Of course, genuinely, but also they have a return on investment, which is basically healthier people means less healthcare costs, less sick days. They, of course, in terms of attraction and retention, they can compete with other employers in similar industries. So there's a lot of benefits, of course, the companies collect by doing this. But they started to understand this more and more, and it became more part of their overall wellness strategy. And so also that there are more senior people involved at these companies working with this. It previously was like benefit managers, and then it became VP of benefits. And now even CHROs are involved in this. So every time we launch a new client, we typically work with a client nationally or sometimes globally, not just in a specific office. So we have the CHRO involved and communicating to all the employees. This was about fitness. And then the other change that was accelerated with COVID was that not just fitness, but the overall well-being strategy became more important. So mental wellness, you know, mindfulness, nutrition, sleep, healthy habits, smoke prevention, everything that is well-being related it became more important, right? Because COVID accelerated burnout, people working from home, people are more stressed, people didn't see their colleagues, people were working more because when you work from home, you work more. And so companies started to become more careful about this, more interested in enlarging this, especially, of course, when gyms were closed. And so I would say the big change in the corporate wellness now is that all these other categories became very important, like meditation, mindfulness, and these categories, of course. We saw, of course, digital fitness became important during COVID, but then when gyms reopened, that became less relevant, although it's still important. But like meditation and other items became more important. That's why we also expanded our reach initially to offer these services when gyms were closed, just to offer something to employees of our clients. But then it stayed there, and we are continuing to offer these other services with partnerships that are not only fitness. But I would say the third component that is related to this, it goes back to fitness, because there's also more awareness that fitness and gyms and physical activity help mental wellness, right? So mental wellness became more important, but of course, it's not only through meditation that you do that. Physical activity also became part of the solution to make people healthier, to make people also morally health. So there's a clear correlation now for employers and for HR that we talked to about the fact that there's people that are physically active, they're also mentally healthier. They don't need necessarily to do all the things like meditation, all the things to be mentally health as well.
So if companies are making that transition from checking the boxes to now investing serious dollars in corporate wellness programs, does that amp up the pressure to provide a return on investment? And are they more KPI driven? How does that work?
Yes, for sure. They're investing more, and their competitors invest more. So they want to see a return on investment, right? Return on investment is mostly, like I mentioned, reduction in healthcare costs, right? Because if people, especially the companies, large employers that are self-insured, so basically they fund their own insurance, they are really interested in having a reduction in healthcare costs. And imagine when you have, I don't know, 200,000, 300,000 employees, even a 1% reduction in claims, it's a lot of money that you save, especially if you're a self-insured company. So if you pay for your own insurance. So I would say the most common ROI measure is really reduction in healthcare costs. And there's a clear connection between physical activity and that. So for example, with our employers, when we launch with our clients, when we launch the benefits for their employees, that's when we start working together very well and very carefully, because they really want to see how many new people join the platform, right? It's our clients evaluate us based on how many people actually use the platform. And then they want to see exactly, okay, I got 3 times more people that are active now, thanks to Gympass. What is the return investment in terms of healthcare cost reduction? And then other things are, of course, sick days. So they measure the number of sick days. So if there is an impact on reduction of sick days, and then more on the talent acquisition piece, that's maybe more qualitative. It's harder to measure, but it's about attraction, retention of talent. And they, of course, measure that as well as part of the results of this. But yeah, it became much more results driven. That's why we have what we call HR portal for our clients. That's where they can check all the data at aggregated level about how many people actually use our platform.
So if Gympass is kind of that bridge that connects the corporate client with the supplier, I'm assuming that you're also held accountable to, you know, and you're held accountable to these KPIs and creating a successful partnership. How do you encourage utilization? Because having access is one thing, but getting these employees to take advantage of it, I'm assuming can be challenging. How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. That's our goal, right? Our goal is really number of active employees within a company. So of course, to do that, I mentioned the variety is a big component, right? Because you want to make sure that they try different things at the beginning, and then maybe if they like one thing, they get stuck with that thing, or maybe 2 different activities. But of course, the variety helps. It removes one barrier. The second barrier is the affordability. So making sure they know they have an affordable, like an investment from their employer that makes it more affordable for them. But I would say the most important component is communication, making sure they know, right? They know that they have this available, especially those companies that they have, I don't know, one large office. It's relatively easier to communicate. Retail companies, for example, that have many different stores, it takes more time to communicate to all the employees. And the communication aspect, that's where HR becomes our partner in this. So we really work with HR. Our client success team works with HR and benefit teams at clients to really communicate to employees. Because one thing is if they receive a communication directly from us, maybe through the Gympass app, and it's a completely different thing if they receive a communication from their CHRO or sometimes even from their CEO. Maybe CEOs working out using Gympass, one of our partners. So HR, I would say, is the key component here, because as you know, we don't do like general public marketing when it comes to users, because people have access only if their employer offers this. So communication and communication through HR is really the key to make sure we do that.
So what are some of the the criteria to a successful partnership? Is it just partnering with HR, encouraging them to encourage frequency and utilization to the employees? What are some of the layers or elements of a successful partnership?
You mean a partnership on the provider side with the gyms or with the clients?
Both.
Okay. So with the clients, I would say the communication, right? Making sure that once we launch the benefit for the employees, we're aligned with HR in terms of communicating, making sure that they help us communicate internally. It's really customized by client. Like say they use Slack, so we create banners for them to use in Slack. They use, I don't know, intranet, making sure they communicate this in the intranet. Email from the CHRO, events at offices. If they have many offices, we can do launch events at their offices. Especially we did that a lot before COVID. So I would say the communication aspect is really most important, because employees need to know. On the gym side or on the partnership side, what makes a partner successful is when they get a relevant revenue income from us, right? Because of course, for partners, there's no cost for joining Gympass, and it's flexible. And they basically collect revenue and collect money if our users visit their facilities. So a successful partner is the outcome of a successful partnership is that. How do we get that? Well, first of all, making sure that they have all the locations online with us. Of course, if you are a one location gym, it's already achieved. But if you are a big chain, it would be important to have all the locations online, because it helps communicate more, right? When we communicate to employees through HR and we communicate about specific partners in those areas, yes, we can do a customized, a targeted communication by area, but it's better if we have that partner nationally. For example, Lifetime is one of our partners. We have all their locations online. So that's important for us and for the partner because they really start seeing return on investment, some revenue income there. And then I would say the other component is user experience, right? So our employees of our clients are used to use the Gympass app. The Gympass app is typically integrated with all the third-party booking systems or gym, even proprietary systems when it comes to checking into their clubs. And that's the what makes the user experience good, right? And smooth. And the user experience is, of course, what allows us to be successful with this partner because there's no disruption. There's not a lot of training needed for the staff, for the gyms, because we use the third-party integration. Our users don't need a lot of explanation because it's a pretty smooth process. They're used to do it with any other gym. So user experience is definitely a component of the success. So I would say having all the gyms aligned, user experience through integration, and third, being aligned on a long-term plan, right? So as what I mentioned before is that with corporate clients, especially the ones that have offices in many different places, it takes time to communicate to all the employees. And so our business, it's a bit slower than consumer business where you can send a big marketing campaign to millions of people. So our growth really comes over time, especially when we launch a new partner. So it's really about building joint business plans with our partners where we review data over time and we can see how much revenue we can bring to them as a revenue stream. And it's important that at this point, also clients see that partners see that this is incremental revenue, right? That's the most, probably the most important piece of the revenue stream that we're bringing, that it's incremental, right? We don't want to kind of cannibalize their existing revenue. So we really measure over time the incrementality of this revenue that we bring, because as I mentioned, on the same way that clients evaluate us based on how many new employees we bring to gyms, the result is that on the gym side, these are new people. It's a new market. They were not going to gyms before. And so 90% typically of the people that we bring to gyms are people that were not going before. And that's something that we keep evaluating with our partners.
I'm so glad you brought this up. Okay. From the supplier side, I feel like there's a negative way of looking at aggregators and marketplaces, kind of like an eye roll of like, oh, this person is not as valuable as like a direct-to-consumer person. Perhaps we're not making the same amount of revenue, but the incremental revenue and the access to these people is so important because it's audience development. However, I feel like so many businesses were burned by a big aggregator that's out there, ClassPass. And the opportunity was to really, for those people, was to really use this as a marketing tool and then turn around and try to sell those people a regular membership as opposed to just having it be visit-based. Now, with a corporate client, with a Gympass client, they're not turning around and trying to sell them something. So how do you overcome that objection from a supplier side if they're just kind of hesitant? Because I've seen that happen. They're kind of reluctant to work with aggregators or marketplaces for those reasons.
Yeah. We get that question a lot. I would say the first answer would be try, right? Because it's flexible. You can leave it anytime. Try and see and measure really what I mentioned before. What is the incrementality, right? Our average is really 90% of the people are new to that gym, to that facility, to the chain. So test this with your own facilities and see the results. So that, of course, is the easiest answer for me. But I think the underlying reason is exactly what you said. It goes back to the B2C versus B2B model. And that's why we're not doing B2C, because in B2C, we would compete with gyms, right? Because gyms have already a strong brand. I would need to go to Google and basically appear for searches of specific gyms and basically cannibalize those members to them in order to drive people to them. So especially for those gyms or studios that are already established in a given neighborhood, they probably have already a very strong customer base. So I think it's very easy to cannibalize those users if you do general marketing in that area. So the key is really, again, the B2B aspect. And the employees of our clients use this benefit. They rely on Gympass as their fitness benefit. So these are not people that we cannibalize because they're using Gympass. They probably were not going to any gyms before. And so if a partner or a studio or a gym is on our network, 90% of the times, it's a new customer. It's a new member going to them. And then once they're in, I think the interesting thing is that, to answer your other question about are they treated differently, they really become part of the community. They become part of their membership base. They just come through Gympass, but they're part of the community. They go there, I don't know, 5 times a week, and they are like any regular customer at that point.
That makes so much sense, because I think people just have to, you know, on the supplier side, need to open their minds and realize that, hey, if you've, you know, you've gotten as far as you're going to get with what you've been doing to reach more clients, to continue to grow, you have to be open to doing things differently and reaching new audiences through avenues like Gympass. So that makes a lot of sense, but it's exactly. Just something that I've heard as an objection. And well, I'm just kind of curious.
It's a good point, because sometimes there's some people might put all aggregators at the same level, but of course, I'm biased because I'm within the industry and I understand that B2C aggregators are very different from B2B aggregators. But it's, of course, if you're not an expert of the marketplace industry, you can see them as a different, they're like all the same. I would say another thing is sometimes people think that aggregators are associated with discounts, like going to gyms at a discounted rate, which is not something that gyms like, especially the premium ones. So I think the B2B component comes in here as well, because the employees of our clients know that it's not a discount. It's just their employer subsidizing for a component of the price.
Okay. So now that we're talking about objections, tell us, Masi, what was a really hard partnership for you to land at Gympass, and what was the thing that sealed the deal?
It seems weird, but there's no like difficult partnership, right? Because as I mentioned before, there's no cost for it's. There's very low barrier, right, to entry on the partnership side. It's no cost for our providers to join. It's very flexible. Potentially, they can leave at any time. We pay them, and there's no like not even like a big investment on the training piece for their staff, because we're integrated with most of their third party booking systems. So I would say sometimes the challenging part is really making sure people hear us and listen to us in terms of getting the platform to learn and listen from us, talking to the right people. That's why, you know, we're doing events like URSA or talking to you today to make sure we have the platform to be listened. But people typically, once they understand that we don't cannibalize their members, and we have an alignment between what they want and what our corporate clients want on their other side. So when there's alignment on the two sides of the marketplace, once they understand this, and the alignment is new people, new employees for clients being active, and new users that were not going before for gyms as a result, once they understand this, it's pretty easy. So I would say it's more about making sure we have the audience. And of course, coming from expanding to the US from other markets at the beginning, that was the challenge. But then now I believe most of the providers know us, and I think it's more about making sure we deliver the results as well, which we are doing so far.
What are some of the trends that you're observing now in this post-COVID world? Because I think that's the biggest thing right now is that we're all facing is things are unpredictable, right? You're coming out of, you can't compare to pre-COVID. COVID was an anomaly. And now in this post-COVID world, what type of trends are you seeing?
Yeah, so the trends that we're seeing are very similar to what our partners see. I think it's that there are some trends in the industry, especially in the US, you know, that some activities became more popular, some activities became less popular. But I don't know if it's related to COVID. We always had historically some activities that became popular and then over time became less popular, and others that came up, you know, Pilates came up in the past years. And this, I think it's normal. It's something that always happened. And our users, the employees of our clients, kind of reflect that. We also have a system where the employees of our clients can request the gym. If we don't have a gym in a specific area, they can request the gym. So we see that people are interested in very similar activities as what you see in the general public, because statistically it's the same people. Of course, it's new people, but in terms of interests, they're not different. Corporate employees are not different from direct consumer customers. I think we're biased on our side because, of course, we are growing and we saw, of course, full recovery from COVID, after COVID, for all our partners when it comes to also number of users that we're getting before COVID and now. Of course, we saw some differences between full service gyms and boutique. So full service gyms, I think, recovered sooner, boutique a bit later, some categories within boutique took more time. And I would say one other item is that with the work from home, that many of our clients still have, or maybe they go to the office, I don't know, 2 days a week, 3 days a week, we saw a more than proportional recovery in suburban areas outside of the city compared to the city center. As of now, everything recovered, but it was faster to recover out in the suburban areas, especially in the affluent suburban areas. Another trend, of course, everybody knows is the digital component, which is digital fitness. And the beginning with COVID, we saw that we adapted our product to make sure we also offered that. We offer live stream classes. For example, with Barry's, we offer their digital classes as well. Of course, a trend with that, of course, is that when gyms were closed, digital was prevalent, was the only thing. Now, as you saw in the industry, the digital fitness component became less relevant than when it was when gyms were closed, obviously, but it's still important. It's still there. It's still definitely bigger than what digital fitness was pre-COVID. Within that, probably we saw, at least on our side, an increase of the on-demand digital fitness compared to the live stream digital fitness classes. When gyms reopened, I would say on-demand remained pretty strong, but some of the live stream classes, the people that were attending live classes shifted back to the regular classes. And then, but on demand is still something that people do. It's people that people are interested in. And then I would say the third trend is that we saw in the other type of well-being and wellness activities like mindfulness, mental wellness, also from our providers, right? Our traditional fitness providers started to offer sometimes this as well. So if they have a digital component, a digital app, they started to offer not only fitness classes on demand, but also meditation and mindfulness. Because as I mentioned before, I believe that mental wellness goes together with physical activity. So they're part of the same offering for many of our providers as well, especially the ones that have a very strong digital app for their customers.
You made a really good point about the suburban markets rebounding, because I think a lot of premium brands always think about going to A markets for expansions, those big urban metropolises, but suburban areas now with the work from home might be a good place to look at for expansion. That was a really good point. Masi, if somebody wants to connect with you or they want to learn more about GymPass, how can they do that?
They can email me at masi.sardi@gympass.com or LinkedIn or talk to you and you send me an email.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for your time.
Okay. Thanks so much, Vanessa.
Hi, everyone. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Thanks for tuning into this episode. If it brought you value, please subscribe, review, and share the Business Side of Fitness podcast. If you'd like to learn more about working with me, please click the link in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you on the next episode.